welcome back. Crazy days, as we said on Friday. Interesting stories. Let me pull these up, and I'll just put them out on the table for Dr. Henry Nyman to comment on, because a lot of you have expressed interest in them. I haven't actually been able to read them, but they are in the headlines, and they're up there now. You think I can read 120 stories a day? Can't do it, much as I'd like to. Okay. Here's one. Welcome, Henry. I'll read these in a moment. How are you?
Not too bad. How are you? You got a good list for me there?
Yeah, I got these two or three stories that are up here that... one is from a questionable site. The other one's from Yahoo. And the other one is from CNBC. So, all right. High German official leaks report denouncing coronavirus as a global false alarm and a massive political op. All right. I've got that. That's been on several sites. Number two, Yahoo. Top Italian doctor, which you've seen, I'm sure, says the coronavirus is losing potency. A second doctor sees it the same way. Third story, WHO says coronavirus isn't losing potency. It's still a killer virus. So those three things. We got one report from Germany denouncing the whole thing as a false alarm at this point and a massive political operation. Certainly, you can argue that it has been used to accomplish political things or unaccomplish them.
Yeah, it's not based on any data, though.
No. Top Italian doctor says the coronavirus is losing potency. Second doctor sees same thing. You've seen that story, yes?
Right. I saw the
potency. I think I sent it
story to
you. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So those things are being kicked around. But here's the bigger deal. The news cycle... The coronavirus pandemic news cycle has been removed from the mainstream media. It's gone. I went down the whole Fox News page this afternoon. Not one coronavirus story. Zero. It's gone. It's all the riot now. So, you know, the rioters are out there spreading virus, and no one's even talking about that. So, anyhow, have at it. Let's hear what you have to say on these things.
Okay, I haven't seen the specific virus hoax story, but the fact that it's somebody saying this at this stage, I can tell you it's utter nonsense. I don't know what they're basing it on, but I mean the virus has spread to, you know, let me get you the number. I mean, there's places that track this, and the number of countries that have the virus, which is novel, it, you know, wasn't known prior to, you know, towards the end of last year, is 215. Okay. So you got a brand new virus. It's in 215 different countries. It's, been linked to, 6,365,173 cases, resulting in 377,397 deaths. Now, how anybody can look at those numbers today and say it's a hoax, that person lives in a parallel universe.
Right.
That is an example of nothing to do with science. Pure misrepresentations or misinterpretations. I didn't read
sure.
the article.
Sure.
I'm sure it's got
either.
Both.
I just scanned
and
it ever so briefly.
That's on a par with uh-huh. these other whack jobs to say, oh, the measles vaccine, the mumps measles vaccine doesn't
MMR.
Work. The MMR doesn't work. And anybody that you know, knows anything about that, it's been around for any length of time, knows that those viruses were widespread, you know, 40, 50 years ago. there were millions of cases. The virus has been wiped off the face of the earth, except for a few pockets here and there, and a few, and they show up again in a few pockets where people don't take the vaccine. And so the fact the virus is gone, and it disappeared when the vaccine appeared, mm-hmm. and the only places it shows up is in unvaccinated populations, and they have groups to say the vaccine doesn't work. Now, you can't make the virus disappear in people that are vaccinated and then say the vaccine doesn't work. So these are examples that are, you know, it's called the big lie. I mean, the lie is so big that people say, well, that can't be not true. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. if they're saying that it isn't, how can that possibly be not true?
Right.
And
right.
It's total absurdities. So I don't know how anybody could put their name to something like that unless they're writing fiction. That you've got 6 million cases of a virus that wasn't known to exist a few months, 6 months ago or 8 months
right,
ago.
Right, right.
6 million cases, 300,000 deaths, and this is just the intro. This is just the herald wave. It hasn't really hit yet. The big show hasn't appeared. And these guys are going to take the preview and mm-hmm. say that this is a hoax. Those are total whack jobs. I don't know who it is.
I've sent you the story. Don't waste too much of your airtime on it. I'm just telling you what's out there.
Well, the only reason it's worth looking at these is to see who is putting it out.
Yeah.
So that you know that they have zero credibility. So this is something I know something about. Basically, the whole world now knows something about the novel coronavirus. And the fact that somebody could put out something with that type of headline is just absurd. Now, as far as the virus going away, you know, that's pretty absurd also. The U.S. is still reporting on the neighborhood of 20,000 cases a day.
mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
if you've got 20,000 cases a day, to say that the virus is pretty much gone
right.
is just absurd. I mean, the deaths
well,
are
we
down
live in
a little bit.
Absurd times, for
the,
sure.
The deaths are down a little bit. And, you know, there's a little bit of bouncing around on how the tests are being done. That some of those 20,000 cases now include DNA antibody tests, so that'll mm-hmm. register positive in people that were even asymptomatic, and so that's a little bit misleading if you want to say, well, how many lab confirmed cases are there? Because generally. The number of actual cases mm-hmm. is about 10 times the numbers that are lab confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm
sure.
reading 6 million cases, that's really closer to 60 million cases because the vast majority of cases are not lab confirmed, especially if you're talking about asymptomatic cases. So, I mean, asymptomatic cases, you can take these antibody tests and even, you know, throw in a factor or two one way or the other, either, you know, they're twice as high or half as high as the test indicates. But that indicates that, you know, the number of people in the U.S. anyway, in New York is like 20% of the population. And in California is like 4% of the population. And you start figuring what 4%, I don't know how many are in California, what, 30 million or something. So, you know, if you got 4% of 30 million, that's a lot of cases just in California. But the bottom line is that the virus is alive and well. The virus has taken over the U.S. is this Italian strain. And it's either dominant where it's in, you know, over 90% of the cases,
mm-hmm.
or in other areas where another strain was dominant and has moved in, is still well over 50% of the cases. And it's almost everywhere in the United States. And that strain is certainly not gone. And it's certainly not.
How about the potency aspect in the Italian doctors?
There may be something new just popped up in Italy that they're seeing. They're saying that the viral RNA levels are low. So that almost sounds like a translation error to me. I'm not sure what they're even talking about. They're essentially saying that, well, they get these patients and they don't have much viral RNA.
Right.
And I don't know if they're getting patients that got infected for the second time and they got infected with the same virus, so they already had immunity, and therefore they're not producing as much virus as they would if they were infected first time. I mean, that would be one explanation. I'm not sure what they're seeing.
Here's what they're saying. Let me read this a little bit.
In the U.S. They said the RNA levels were low.
Yeah.
their viral load was low. They didn't really say what the strain was, what the lineage was.
Well, one would assume they had the Italian strain, I would think. Yeah.
Why would you assume that?
They were in Italy.
Past tense.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. This guy's in Milan.
Right.
He says in reality. Yeah.
They've gotten rid of the virus in Italy. That was the whole point. So the virus was pretty much gone in Italy. The way viruses work, if you have one virus there and it affects a high percentage of the population, and then it goes away, the reason it goes away is because most of the people have immunity to it. So it can't go from person to person because the next person that would normally get infected has antibodies and they don't get infected.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to a place like Italy, which had the Italian strain, if they get new virus, chances are it's not the Italian strain, because the Italian strain everybody's got immunity to because they're in Italy. So
they may
have a new strain. What?
A new strain, a mutation.
Yeah, they may have imported a different strain from a different location.
Okay.
There are multiple strains.
It's over 30.
Well, it depends how you define strain. If you define, there's like three main strains beyond the original. So there's like four different strains that are out there.
All right.
And the Italian one has become dominant. I mean, the Italian one is actually now divided up into three. So there's three Italian strains, and then there's three other strains, including the original strain. So that, if you count the three Italian, then you have six different strains.
Mm-hmm.
So they could have essentially got one of those, or each of these is evolving, and so it could be another version of this, which is just different enough to infect somebody who's already had the Italian strain, but not different enough to produce a lot of virus, so they have a low viral load. The viral load is generally highly dependent upon when it's measured and how well the infected person is battling the virus. I mean, all of these are a battle between the virus trying to grow in its new host and the host trying to eliminate the virus. And so generally most people recover So most people, once they recover, their viral load is zero. You can't detect the virus anymore. They've eliminated the virus. And at the beginning, the viral load is low because they just got infected. And the, you know, initially you don't have symptoms. You don't have symptoms mm-hmm. until you get enough virus there. Mm-hmm. And so the viral load is dependent upon when you test, number one. But number two, if you've got a different strain, it's just a little bit different than the Italian. So it's different enough to infect you and give you symptoms and be detected on the test. Then that could just mean that the low viral load is due to the fact that it's a new strain, but it's not a very efficient strain. But it's able to kind of make some headway in Italy because Italy has pretty much gotten rid of the Italian strain because everybody's got immunity to it now. So that's why I say I don't know what the strain is. I doubt it's the Italian strain because the Italian strain produces a lot of virus
right.
in most people.
If I might, for our listeners, you read the story. They haven't. Let me just read what the guy says. He's saying what you're saying. Rome, Reuters. The new coronavirus is losing its potency and has become much less lethal, a senior Italian doctor said on Sunday. In reality, this is a quote, the virus clinically no longer exists in Italy, said Alberto Zangrillo, the head of the San Rafael Hospital in Milan in the northern region of Lombardy, which has borne the brunt of the coronavirus contagion. He said the swabs that were performed over the last 10 days showed a viral load in quantitative terms that was absolutely infinitesimal compared to the ones carried out a month or 2 months ago, he told RAI television. Let me go down here. Zangrillo has said some experts were too alarmist about the prospect of a second wave of infections, and politicians needed to take into account this new reality. Almost done. The government urged caution, saying it was far too soon to claim any kind of victory. Pending scientific evidence to support the thesis that the virus has disappeared, I would invite those who say they are sure of it not to confuse Italians, said the undersecretary at the health ministry in a statement. We should instead invite Italians to maintain the maximum caution, maintain physical distancing, avoid large groups, to frequently wash their hands and wear masks. A second doctor from northern Italy told the National that he was also seeing the coronavirus weaken. Final sentence, the strength of the virus had 2 months ago is not the same strength it has today, said that doctor, head of another hospital in the city of Genoa. So there's the whole story, and that's pretty much what Henry's been saying. Exactly.
Right. So these are clinicians that are looking at how sick their patients are and how much virus they have. They're not looking at the virus, so they can't even tell you what lineage it is. And they're just saying, well, these
no sequencing going on there. I didn't read anything.
No, there probably is, but the clinicians
not,
generally
not by
don't
them,
look
though. No.
Right.
No.
Well, there are. I actually looked when I saw that. There are some newer sequences out of Italy, and the newer sequences really don't look that different. I mean, they are the Italian sequence. I mean, they're newer. They're not like in the last 10 days, because it takes a while to sequence them. These are ones that were collected in May, but not the end of May, you know, like more like the beginning of May. So the bottom line is what they're describing is what I said. They are describing how virulent the virus is in a population that's got immunity. So if you got immunity and you get infected with the virus, then you're likely to have mild symptoms and a lower viral load. Now, the idea of no second wave, he may be a good doctor, a good medical doctor, but he's not a good virologist because he doesn't really understand how a second wave is created. Second wave just isn't dependent upon the calendar. Meaning, we got some more virus the second time it came. That's where the second wave is, I guess. No. The second wave is the virus that emerges and is different than the virus in the first wave. And the reason it emerges is because the people that were vaccinated, immunized in the first wave, don't recognize the virus. Or in the case of this coronavirus, it may be much worse than that. They not only don't recognize, but the antibodies they have to the earlier version facilitates the entry of the virus, of the second virus. And as a result, it's much more lethal because you do have very high viral titers, viral loads, and people end up, when they're faced with more virus initially, they don't do as well in that battle. They may eventually defeat the virus, but it takes longer and they get sicker. And if you got a lethal virus like this one that your first paper calls a hoax, the second paper says is weakened, but it isn't either, then you've got a problem. And I've got a little bit more data that suggests the second wave is much more in the reality realm. And these others are pure fantasy and wishful thinking. And it's kind of an update on the story I had told you last week of an acquaintance that had basically gotten infected the second time.
Right.
And
how's that going?
I'm waiting.
Yeah.
He actually just got discharged today, so he is out. He did have pretty serious neurological issues. I haven't seen this yet, so I'm waiting to get the sequences. Okay, I have not seen the sequences, but rumor has it, you know, he's my source anyway. He says that they were able to find his original sample. He had been infected back in April, and so had his family, his mother and sister. So all three of them had been infected in April. And then he recently went to Buffalo and got infected a second time. And then he came home and infected his sister and mother, who also ended up testing positive second time. And their cases were not as serious, and they weren't hospitalized. They basically were positive. They had mild symptoms, and they recovered. So in their case, there really wasn't that much difference between the first infection and the second infection. The person I know, he was much sicker the second time. He had a much higher viral load.
Uh-huh.
And they had sequenced it, and he did have the Italian strain. And then when they found the earlier sample, they sequenced that, and that actually was the original Wuhan strain before it had picked up these mutations to produce these three different major strains.
Right.
And so if all that information is accurate, then that would suggest that this is somewhat akin to what I was explaining, that he had been infected with the original strain. He didn't get that high of a titer. He only had an antibody titer about 1 to 80. So he probably didn't get that much virus. He wasn't sick very long. His sister was asymptomatic, and his mother wasn't that sick. So that's kind of what happens early on in a pandemic, is that start out with no immunity, and therefore, you know, any old kind of virus can successfully infect the host and produce some symptoms, because the host doesn't have much of a defense initially. And then what this is suggesting, in his case anyway, is that the antibodies that he produced against the Wuhan strain weren't sufficient to really keep him from being infected by the Italian strain, and may in fact have facilitated the infection of the Italian strain. So he ended up with a more severe disease, and he ended up with these neurological issues. Mm-hmm. And his mother and sister didn't. Mm-hmm. And that's what's called antibody enhancement.
Is he getting better? Are those neurological issues receding?
Yeah. He says he's in good shape. I mean, he just got out today. He tested negative for the virus twice, and he initially had the symptoms. He actually passed out before he went into the hospital, and then he had some symptoms again when they kind of went away and came back while he was in the hospital. And now he doesn't have them, at least,
I see.
Today.
That's good.
Whether they're going to come back or not. But he was measured several times. Now the reason this is significant, if all the above is accurate, the associated information is that his case was not an unusual case. And the doctor that was treating him had like 15 patients that had similar situations where they'd been infected twice now, and they had some neurological issues, or at least a subset of them. And one thing that was unusual was that he had 15 cases and 14 of them were male. So this phenomenon, at least in his sample, it was heavily weighted towards males. And he's part of a larger group. And so I believe they have more than just these 15. And it's probably going to be written up, and it's going to be published in the not too distant future. And the reason I'm bringing this up is, number one, it could explain, you know, what they're seeing in Italy. You know, but that way it works on the positive side, where the people that have the antibodies end up having a milder version of whatever subsequent strain infected them. But this could signal a potential major problem with the upcoming vaccine. And the upcoming vaccines, the ones that are kind of in the lead for vaccine development, are all made against the original Wuhan strain. So they were essentially made against the version that infected this person that I know. And as a result, he did make antibodies. He did kind of get rid of the virus, and he got rid of the virus fairly quickly. So he wasn't that sick. His immune system worked, and he was fine until the Italian strain came along. And then the Italian strain does have a amino acid change in the spike protein, which is the protein that most of the immune response is directed against. And that change in the spike protein is in an immunodominant area. So it's known that changes in that particular region, including this particular change, can make a big difference as far as how well the immune response recognizes this. And so that leaves open the possibility that this is the type of antibody enhancement issue that has been seen previously in SARS-like coronaviruses. And it's a concern for any vaccine that's going to be developed against this virus, because there's the possibility that the vaccine will actually enhance the ability of a somewhat different strain infecting. And then being immunized against one isn't really going to help you against the next one. It's actually going to hurt you and make you more susceptible to that. And so the reason I'm saying that if all this is true, the sequence information that he gave me and the explanation as to why he had these neurological, and when the paper comes out, it'll probably be a lot clearer as to how often this happens and what kind of problems they have in the second infection. But this is true. It raises a concern that the upcoming vaccine may work, quote unquote, in the sense that it produces antibodies.
Mm-hmm.
Vaccination, it produces antibodies, and the antibodies react with the virus,
mm-hmm.
and the antibodies might even be able to neutralize the virus. But the antibodies may not work against the next version, which in this case would be the Italian strain. And so there's some talk about, the vaccine may be ready by the end of the year. They're going to start giving it to first responders. And, even if they're off a little bit and it's ready by the January, February, my guess is there'll still be a fair amount of this Italian strain around. And the reason I think there may be is because it has become dominant. And in the U.S., it's almost everywhere.
We probably
and
have
in other countries.
97% of Americans who have not been infected. So we've got a huge number of people just waiting to be afflicted by this virus. Huge.
Right. And it's made big inroads in around the world. I mean, what I'm saying is the dominant one in the U.S. You know, there's a table at GSAS that shows the three different versions of the Italian strain and the other three strains.
Yeah.
And, the three strains together represent, I don't know, something like 70-80% of all the virus out there. So the vast majority of all of the virus out there is one of these lineages from the Italian. And even if the virus in the second wave in the fall is somewhat different, there's still a good chance it's going to be the Italian lineage. It's going to have this one version, this one change, which seems to create a problem with people that saw the Wuhan strain or the vaccine, which will have the Wuhan strain. And it may have a couple additional changes, which allows it to escape from people that do have antibodies to the Italian strain. And in fact, it may end up having this same type of enhancement effect. So even if you were infected with the Italian strain, which is the case for 20% of the population in New York, it's not a couple percent. They're 20% that they're detecting, and who knows, how good the assay is. It could be that they're detecting 20%, but there's really 40% that's been infected. I mean, I know a lot of people in the New York, New Jersey area who have been infected, and it's not that. I know that many people in the New York, New Jersey area. Some relatives it's not one or two people. I know quite a few people that have been infected, and a couple of whom have been hospitalized. And so it is pretty widespread. And actually, a few more that are highly suspect who probably didn't. They're actually going to get antibody tests in the next week or so and see whether they were infected also. So the bottom line is that virus is widespread. It's still in New York. New York has gone down considerably, but they still end up with 60, 70 people die every day in New York still from the virus. And several thousand get infected every day from the virus. It's just a lot less than it was, but it's not like it's gone away. It's gone down in New York, and it's gone down quite a bit. But relative to some of the other states, it still has quite a bit of virus. And so the potential still exists that there will be a second wave. And the second wave won't be because, you know, won't not happen because there is immunity to the virus in the first wave, like there is in Italy, or there, you know, is to some extent in New York and New Jersey. And I mean, most of the major outbreaks on the eastern, on this side of the Mississippi, basically involved the Italian strain. The Italian strain is in Massachusetts and in the Boston area. It's in New York and New Jersey. It's in eastern Pennsylvania. It's now going down to Maryland and Virginia. It was in New Orleans. It was in Detroit. And it's not totally dominant, but it does account for about half of the cases in Chicago. So it's been in the major outbreak.
Oh, you dropped away, Henry. There you are, back. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. It has been most of the major outbreaks in the U.S., and it is still around in all of those places, even though it's down, most notably in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area. And it's all over the world. I mean, Brazil is now number two in the world, and Brazil is the Italian strain, and Russia is now number three in the world, and Russia is the Italian strain. And so it's, and the UK in some have is number four, and others have it's number five behind Spain, but it's going to pass Spain in about 10 days or so. So the top four countries in the world all have this Italian strain, and they're in the northern hemisphere, and they're in the southern hemisphere, and they're in North America, and they're in South America, and they're in Asia, and they're in Europe. So they've got a good percentage of the population covered. They're not that widespread in Asia, in China, or I think there's some in India already. But that's what China's worried about. China's worried that they're going to kind of import it from Russia because they share a long border with Russia.
They've already got some in there.
Right, right. And they would be susceptible to what I described, where somebody had the Wuhan strain, and within 2 months or 6 weeks, they went and they had the Italian strain, and the Italian strain was worse. And that's why if you look at the numbers of cases, that's why China is, you know, it goes down every day every week or so. It's now down to number 17 or so. And it keeps on dropping because it doesn't really have that many cases. And all of these other countries are basically infected with the Italian strain, and the numbers are going up quickly. And they just keep on dropping. I mean, Saudi Arabia just passed China. And Saudi Arabia is not that big. So that gives you an idea. And, you know, Pakistan, Belgium, and Qatar, and Bangladesh are, you know, closing in on China. So
what's the status in India, Henry? Do you know? They were worried for a while. They had a lot of cases.
The situation is not that good. India's moved up to number 7 now. They're right behind mm-hmm. Italy and the UK and Spain. So, at least on this one site, they've got, almost 200,000 cases now with, 5,000 deaths. And, it's a low percentage of the population, but, you know,
that's India?
An area that's
200,000. Yeah, there's no right. way they're going to hold that thing down. The way they live right. there, they're so crammed right. together. It's worse than I've ever seen anywhere else. Just it's amazing.
Yeah, they haven't been had infections for that long. So I mean, they moved up to number 7 pretty quickly, and. And that's why I say some of the ones in front of them, like Italy and Spain, aren't having that many cases now. So they'll pass them, you know, fairly easily if they keep on tacking on, you know, 5 or 10,000 cases a day. But the U.S. is still way out front. I mean, the U.S. has got, you know, 107,000 now deaths. And they've got, you know, 1.85 million. So, I mean, the U.S. is closing on 2 million cases on its own. Mm-hmm. And we're still doing, you know, 20,000 a day. And
what are your thoughts? what do you feel about the fact that it's been vacuumed out of the news? It's gone. It's not there.
Well,
it's just gone.
What are your thoughts? My thoughts are this is paralleling the swine flu. The swine flu made a lot of news in the spring of 2009. And then it kind of stood out because seasonal flu went away and the swine flu persisted. And the CDC right. kept on monitoring it. But it was kind of fading, you know, it didn't drop and disappear like seasonal flu, and it basically totally replaced seasonal flu. But it kind of dropped out over the summer, and there weren't that many stories on it. Like I said, it was at summer camps, and the summer camps called it a mystery disease, or they didn't really want to talk about it, or whatever they had was under control.
Oh, I remember. That's true.
And so it really wasn't in the news much over the summer. And then it came back in the news when school started in the South. So in August, cases started to show up in some of the schools in the South. And then it kind of started making another comeback when school started further north in the U.S. anyway. And then it was a couple of, a month and a half into the season the school season. So it got into October, November. Then in October, November, the weather was cooler. And as far as I could tell here in Pittsburgh, they basically just all got infected the second time. The first time they just had a cough. People were symptomatic. They really weren't that sick. They really didn't have a fever. They really didn't miss school. They just kind of, you know, said, I got that, you know, whatever's going around, that crud. And it only lasted a couple days. And then it came back 6 weeks later, and then everybody had a fever, and they went to the doctor, and they said they had swine flu, and they went to the nurse, and they sent them home. And all of a sudden, there was 10-15% absenteeism. So there was a lot of news on it, and a lot of, you know, some schools closed, and, you know, the race to get the vaccine ready. And so it got in the news and, you know, produces a fair amount of, it produces much more disease in the fall than it did in the spring. And I anticipate the same thing happening with this. Number one, you got all the, you know, the marching and protests going on. So that's taking most of the news and most of the information. there is some concern out there with, spreading the virus that some of these cities, most of the people have masks, but that makes it, effective, but people are yelling and screaming and then they get tear gas and they're coughing and so the tear gas would definitely cause the virus to spread a lot more because people are just kind of, got
spewing
all of that
everywhere.
Tear gas and it's going everywhere. Right. So you'll hear about it again. I went just to give an idea. I sent over Friday. I'll probably do another one, but I had mentioned this before with excess deaths, and that's one way you can see what's going on with the virus.
Define excess deaths for our listeners again, please, real quick.
Right. The excess deaths are, this is really basic information. This is based upon death certificates. So everybody that dies is supposed to have a death certificate and supposed to get reported and recorded and then it goes in for medical purposes. I mean, they tally all these things. So each state kind of reports how many people died and they send a copy of their death certificate in. And this tallies that. So what I sent was a link at the CDC. They show the last 4 years or 3.5 years. They go back to 2017, uh-huh. and you can do it by state. So I'm just going to tell you what it looks like for Ohio because I did that one and took a picture of it and kind of have it all linked up. And so anyway, the graph basically shows how many people died every week since January of 2017 up through May 16th, week ending May 16th. And then they use that historical data to basically put down a line above those curves that shows how high it has to get on that particular week of that year to be considered an excess death. So it has to get above that number. And then it says, well, it's in the epidemic phase, kind of epidemic levels of the virus. And for Ohio, if you look at that, what it shows is the, and just take a look at that threshold, the threshold kind of dips down in the summer and then it goes up and it generally peaks right around the beginning of the year and then it goes back down again and it kind of wiggles a little bit. And, if you get above that, then you got a problem that you've got an outbreak. And normally that outbreak signals the flu. It's used to report excess deaths so you can tell when it's a bad flu season. And generally for the United States, including Ohio, in the past, since 2016, or 2017, I should say, only 1 year was there an outbreak where they had multiple weeks that broke through that threshold. And that was in 2018. Mm-hmm. And for Ohio, 3 weeks right around January 1st, broke through that threshold. So they had excess deaths for 3 weeks in a row. And one of them just barely touched that line. One of them got a little bit above and the other one got, a little bit more than that.
Right.
Now, if you look at the graph for Ohio, it hasn't had any other weeks until 6 weeks ago. And then 6 weeks ago, it broke through it touched the line. And then a couple of weeks later, it was quite a bit above the line. And now the line is actually going down since flu season's over. And, this last week, the week ending on the 26th, it dramatically went above the line. And it basically, if you highlight the line, so it'll give you the details. So for the week ending May 16th, mm-hmm. the number of deaths that are expected in that week in Ohio is 2,285. The threshold is 2,428. And the number that they actually had was 3,570. So that's 47 to 56% above the threshold. So they had 1,200 people die in that week more than they should have. And so 3,570 died instead of 2,400 would have been at the threshold. Normally only 2,200 would die. So they actually had 1,300 people died over and above. So instead of 2,200 dying, 3,500 died. And that's a signal that there's a problem. And those excess deaths are solely due to COVID. So 1,300 people died in the week ending the 16th. And that's not the full number. Because they usually don't get the reports in for at least 10 days. And so they keep on tacking these numbers on. So next week, they'll have through the week ending on the 23rd, and the week ending the 16th, I assure you will have more than 3,507. It'll go even higher because they haven't all been reported.
All right. So, we got to wrap it. Go ahead.
Right. So these excess deaths are a way that you can see how they compare to flu, how they increase. And in the case of Ohio, since it just jumped up so dramatically in the last week, mm-hmm. it's going to continue going up. These usually do a little bit of a curve, so they don't go up for 1 week and come right back down again.
Right.
And that's an indication. I'll give you an update next week in Ohio. But it is real, and it's going to be worse in the fall and these other reports you're getting.
Okay. Here.